Lauren Hartglass. You are listening to It's All About Food. And now we're going to just relax and have a good time and talk more about my favorite subject, food, because it really can be fun. And I'm going to bring on my next guest, Vance Lemkuhl, who writes V for Veg, the vegan food column in the Philadelphia Daily News. And he's the founder and producer of VegCast, a popular podcast on vegan and vegetarian issues, a cartoonist. He is the author of a collection of vegetarian cartoons, The Joy of Soy, and is also a founding member of the eco-conscious pop band Green Beings. The band's Lemkuhl penned patter song, Leftovers, listing all the foods available after eliminating meat and dairy, is a favorite at venues such as Vegetarian Summerfest and has been played multiple times on Dr. Demento's radio show. Vance went vegetarian in 1985 and has been vegan since 2000. Welcome, Mr. Vance Lemkuhl, to It's All About Food.
Hello, Karen.
Hey, how are you?
I'm pretty good today. How are you?
I'm very good. You know, I can't remember when I met you. It was at some Summerfest long ago, and
yeah.
I haven't seen you for quite some while, but
get you back to Summerfest.
I know. There's just too many things to do.
Yeah, I know how it is.
Too many things. And you probably experience this too, and I say this from time to time, but I used to think I knew all the vegans.
Yeah.
And I don't anymore.
There's so many of them. They're proliferating like mad.
So many of them, and some of them are making more of them. I mean, there's certainly not enough, but we are increasing, and that's a good thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, I used to say this about vegan restaurants in Philadelphia or vegan-oriented restaurants in Philadelphia, that I would know about them like 6 months before they came out. And lately, you know, I'm hearing, hey, did you hear about this? You know, and I'm a vegan food columnist. I'm finding out from other vegans, because there are just so many of them cropping up. And so it's great that there are too many of those to keep track of.
I know. Well, I certainly feel the same way here in New York City. There are many that I have not been to, which I cannot believe, because like 20 years ago, if there was a vegetarian restaurant that popped up, I had to be there. It was such an amazing thing, and it's still amazing, but it's they're everywhere.
Yeah.
And they're good.
It's an embarrassment of riches, I
guess. Exactly. Well, whenever I think of you or see your name pop up on the Internet, when your column comes up in the philly.com, I always have a smile on my face, because you always bring out the best or the fun things in the vegetarian vegan lifestyle.
Well, thank you. That's kind of my role. I try to try to bring the fun.
And well, it's important, because if we really focused on why we do what we do, it's not fun.
Well, no.
And, you know, the world has a lot of ugliness to it, a lot of pain, a lot of suffering, a lot of exploitation, and it can be hard to just get on with life, get up every morning out of bed, but we wouldn't be experiencing life the way we should if we stayed on the dark side. And it's really important to see the humor. Humor is healing. Humor can energize. And I thank you for doing that.
Well, sure. I mean, I should give a shout-out to Dan Ferraro, who I had a talk about this with on VegCast, this very topic of how you take something that is just intrinsically not funny and find humor in it. And I did my book in 97, The Joy of Soy, which I was just vegetarian at the time. So, you know, some of the cartoons are flawed from my perspective now. But, you know, Dan's continued to crank out Bizarro, and he very often will do another vegan-oriented cartoon. He keeps on coming up with new angles to both amuse people and yet, you know, make them think for a second while they're reading their daily newspaper. So I think he's a great master of that.
Well, that's the idea, to get people to think And as we know, most people are sleepwalking through life for the most part. And many of us are marketed through life to live and react and shop and consume the way corporations would like us to. And, wow, what kind of power we get when we start to think.
That's true. I mean, it's a double-edged sword because you know, people shield themselves from the kind of stuff that is troubling to think about. And when you do think about it, at first, if you just let that be something that remains troubling, you can be either troubled by it or try to shut it out. But if you start doing something about it, it becomes more of an impetus to do more and to get out there and try to make an impact.
Now, of course, cartoons are visual, but could you describe some of yours, maybe some that have really gotten, that you've heard a lot about or gotten a lot of great response to?
Well, let's see, I'll just tell you about two cartoons. One was in The Joy of Soy. It's my favorite cartoon in The Joy of Soy, which, I don't know if you're familiar with the musical Sweeney Todd or the story of Sweeney Todd.
I performed in Sweeney Todd several times. I'm just going to plug myself here, but I was in it with Gene Stapleton in one production.
Wow. You know, I can't really approach that. All I did was I redrew the iconic poster image that had this kind of 19th century cartoon of Sweeney Todd and Mrs. Lovett.
Yeah.
You know, with him with his hands in the air and looking like he's shouting, and I had Mrs. Lovett coming to him saying, a guy out there wants to know if we have any vegetarian pies, and Sweeney Todd said, he's in luck, a vegetarian just came in this morning. So I always thought that was a pretty funny cartoon, although it's not one of those that really, I think, is going to convert anybody to veganism or anything. The other cartoon that I have to mention, just because I keep on seeing it all over the place, is one that I just drew basically as an exercise in using Flash, the application, just using the drawing portion of it when I was learning how to use that software. And so I drew a bunch of overweight and unhealthy-looking people asking a bunch of thin people who were obviously vegans because they had T-shirts on that said meat is murder or whatever. And the unhealthy people are like eating drumsticks and ice cream and asking the vegans, where do you get your protein? And this has now been picked up and had a caption added to it about obesity in America, which I did not actually have on the original cartoon, but I've seen this now like dozens of times around the internet, and some people like get upset saying, you know, it's possible to be vegan and be obese and blah, blah, blah. You can't be tarring people with this brush. So I'm actually just mentioning that to explain that I did not put that caption on the cartoon, and it now seems to be out of my control. And it's one of those internet memes that goes around and flares up now and again. So so maybe, I don't know, that was not meant to be, you know, a professionally released cartoon. I just put it up on my webpage as a kind of exercise, but that's become one that,
and can we,
I guess it does resonate with some people.
And where can we see that?
Well, I don't actually have it.
No, you don't.
You probably
okay,
go
great.
To Google Images and type in where you can get your protein, and it will probably come up somewhere there. It was on my, back when I was a cartoonist for the Philadelphia City Paper, they gave me a web page where I promoted some of the Joy of Soy stuff, but that is not there anymore because I haven't done any cartooning for them for about 10 years now, so.
Okay.
Back in the day.
Back in the day. Well, you know, it's funny you bring up Sweeney Todd. It's, I think, one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And, there were a number of things. I always wonder sometimes when people see things if they get some of the messages, and I don't even know if some of the messages were intended the way I interpret them. But the funny thing, the creepy thing about that particular show, if people aren't familiar with it, is This man, who's a barber, comes back to his town, London, to seek vengeance and for something he was very wronged for. And he is working above a pie shop, and it's during the Industrial Revolution, and everybody's poor. And the woman in the pie shop can't afford to buy meat, and they end up putting dead bodies into meat pies. It's really economical, and they're recycling, and and most of the bodies that the barber kills are people that are lonely and alone. Okay, but you know, people get this reaction like, oh my God, people in pies, and certainly we shouldn't be cannibals. But I mean, it's not that far a stretch from all of the somebodies that we're putting in all of our food products, the cows and the pigs. They're not it. They're someone's.
Right. And I think it resonates very much with the whole horse meat.
Oh, gosh. Can we talk about that crazy thing for a minute?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm intrigued by the horror that people have realizing, you know, in the same way that a lot of them would if they said, by the way, those meat pies have people in them, that saying, by the way, you've been eating horse, and, you know, they were perfectly happy when they thought they were just eating cow, but horse, that's like, you know, it's a whole other thing, because there is, you know, this cultural division in, and it doesn't even extend across the channel, apparently, to France, but, you know, in England and America, generally, we just think of that as equivalent to eating the family dog or the family cat, and it's all a question of just how you're thinking of it. You're doing the same wrong, and it's the same kind of abomination. And the point I would like to just be sure to remind people is that that's the price that we pay, or those of us who are eating meat, for trying to shut it out, try to shut out the facts of what's going on, and try to not look at what's going on. The meat industry around the world flourishes with all kinds of deceptive and corrupt practices because consumers generally, they just want to get the meat and not know anything about where it came from or how, because that kind of thought is troubling. And so, you know, when you have that kind of vacuum of knowledge, then it's almost inevitable that things like this are going to kind of go in and fill it up, because there's no light being shined on them. So it's I think it's a phenomenon that people should, as consumers, should be aware of, that, you know, when you support the meat industry with your dollars, you're basically paying it to deceive you. And it might be, you know, rather than agitating for better labeling or anything like that, it might be better to just opt out of that whole system.
Well, why is it okay to eat a cow or a pig but not eat a horse? I mean, just really simply. Or why is it okay to eat a cow's side but cringe at eating their brains?
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense at all, because it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Well, I can't argue the fence aspect.
And you made such a good point, where so many people don't know what's in their food. They don't care what's in their food until the media tells them something to care about, and then everybody gets all hysterical. And one of the best examples recently is that whole pink slime thing,
right,
which just made me laugh, because, yeah, it sounds pretty gross, pink slime, but the meat industry is just trying to get as much protein out of their raw materials as they can, and you have no idea what else they're doing.
Right.
That's the tip of the iceberg, okay? A little ammonia to make this slop usable in hamburger.
Right. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's funny that everybody got outraged about pink slime, but, you know, what might be called brown slime or brown...
How about the excrement that's allowed in food?
There's all kinds of, yeah, I mean, we could name any number of things that are unsavory to talk about.
Or the pus in milk.
Are standard in these products. But I guess maybe, that's on the calendar for later this year or next year to have a little blow up about some other component. But again, it's, people seem to think that if we can just eliminate this or make this tweak to the system, you know, then we can continue to do this thing that we know is not right, but which we happen to enjoy the flavor of. But really, it's the only real solution is to just eliminate it, in my opinion.
Yes, just get rid of it. My dad always says, if you can't solve the problem, eliminate the problem, and that's how you do it. Eat plants. Everybody eat plants.
Yeah.
I like putting messages out through art.
Yeah.
And I think that you do that to a large degree, and you also are a musician, and you're still doing your green beings?
Yeah, I mean, let's see, our most recent album was Electric Green. It had a bunch of songs. I have a new... I don't want to necessarily talk about what's happening this year until I have it nailed down, but there's a song that I really enjoy that I'm trying to get a good studio recording of that Sarah Schluter-Eisman, George Eisman's daughter, sang at Summerfest a couple years ago, which is set to a lyric by a blind Arab poet from the 11th century named Al-Ma'ri. Which is, it's got some of the most really trenchant observations on how humans feel from the animal world for no good reason. And it's really, it's eye-opening that somebody was writing this stuff, you know, a millennium ago. And I set that to music, and I think that came out pretty well. So that's going to be on the next thing that we put out. But yeah, I mean, trying to get things across in whatever way, I think music and humor do share the aspect that if you can kind of get into somebody's brain in a way that they're already kind of predisposed to enjoy something aesthetically, then you bring the message along with that, and usually I think they're in a little better frame of mind to evaluate the message, where when you're just talking to them and presenting things that are logical and factual, they're used to, you know, seeing that coming and trying to put up defenses against it.
We were talking about energy in the first part of this program, and there's a whole mystery behind energy, but I think people are a lot more receptive to understanding certain concepts at a different level, and we're communicating at a different level through music. I mean, I love connecting with people and knowing that I've touched them somehow in some moment. It is one of the greatest feelings I've ever had, and I know that we don't really understand what's going on, but something is going on.
Yeah, and I hope you're still doing that. I remember you had a great singing voice, and I hope you're bringing that to people around.
Thank you.
You go. So.
Yeah, we actually have some big plans. I'm not going to be specific about that right now, but it involves vegetables and music.
Cool. That's great.
Yeah.
I'll look forward to that.
Yeah. You have a podcast, the VegCast, right?
Yes.
And part of it, you feature music.
Yep.
And one of the musicians at least has to be vegetarian. Is that the rule?
Yeah, if it's a solo artist, either the solo artist himself, or if it's a band, at least one member of the band has to be at least vegetarian. So that's a rule I've had from the beginning. And the only other rule is that I have to have the permission from the artist who actually has the right to give me permission to play the song and put it permanently online at vegcast.com. So I've been able to get from some people, some high-profile people like Moby and Noah Mackay, Jim James, but a lot of there are a lot of vegetarian and vegan musicians out there that kind of don't have a lot of showcase, so I've also been able to showcase some of them. So So if people are listening to this and you are a musician, you can contact me at vance@vegcast.com, and we can see about finding a slot there.
Okay, I'm going to send my brother to you.
Okay, beautiful.
my brother's a vegan, and he has a jazz band called Batik. And
okay.
You can go to batikjazz.com to get a taste of some of his music.
Great. We'd like to try to let people find out about these bands, some of the ones that we've had on VegCast. I'm hearing about them other places, and they're starting to get reputation. So it's I don't want to say, you know, go on VegCast and that's your ticket to stardom, because there are other people that hasn't happened.
Oh yeah, just a few.
It is part of the mission of VegCast is to kind of try to disperse and spread information that is out there that people might not encounter otherwise. So, and I should also allow that we do also tend to play a lot of Green Beans on VegCast because I can. So
obviously, of course.
Those. Yeah.
Yes. And what is a green being? Anyway.
Well, the concept of the band really is just encompassing the whole the green aspect with another songwriter in the band, Paul Nordquist, who has flirted with vegetarianism, but is more like emphasizing the environmental aspect. He's a great pop songwriter. He's written a bunch of the songs. I tend to write songs more about the food aspect or about the animal justice aspect, but the overall concept of the band is to take kind of these concepts that have to do with social responsibility or ethics or these kind of serious topics and treat them in a lighthearted way that hopefully still carries a little bit of a message with them, but also allows people to tap their toes and hum along. So that's the basic concept.
Mm-hmm. It's a good one. So we just have a few more minutes left, and I wanted to wrap it up talking about food.
Yeah.
The good part of food. So earlier you were talking about the restaurants in Philadelphia, and some when new ones pop up, you're not the first one to know about it. But I haven't been to Philly in a while. What are some of the good restaurants, vegan restaurants that are there?
Oh, we have a good many now. The most important one historically has been Horizons, which was in Philadelphia from 2006 to 2011. Then they closed and reopened. The owners of Horizons opened as a new restaurant with a similar emphasis called Veg, where they actually have been doing more with just vegetables and moving away from trying to imitate the kind of meat-centered dish where you have a big hunk of protein in the middle and then garnish it with sides. They're actually doing very creative and exciting things with vegetables in a fine dining environment. It's a hugely popular restaurant in town. And at the other end, in terms of just, upscale or downscale, you have Blackbird Pizza, which is just this basic kind of pizza joint that has great pizza. It's all vegan. They use Daiya cheese, and they also have some cheeseless pizza. They have cheesesteaks and things that are all vegan. And I've mentioned Horizons because this restaurant, as well as another one called Hip City Veg, which is kind of a fast food vegan, and two other places that recently opened, all come from people who trained at Horizons. They all started out as line cooks or other things at Horizons, and they've gone off and started their own places. And one thing that they all share is the ethic of veganism. It's not just people who decided to try to cash in on a trend or they're doing something and offering a couple of vegan dishes. These are people who are vegans and who basically want to share this food with as many people as possible.
I have to say that I love that, and I don't think it's completely true in the restaurant industry. I know that a lot of people get into it because they have a passion for food, and it's a great feeling to feed people, but I really think with vegan restaurants, it's more true where the owners and the chefs, it's more than food. It's a complete message, health, environment, animals, and it's a beautiful thing. Well, Vance, thank you so much for joining me, and it's all about food.
Yes, okay, thank you.
Okay, and check out V for Veg and VegCast, and look for those great cartoons from The Joy of Soy. All right, I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Please visit my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com, and we'll be back for more next week. Have a delicious one.